People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
While the majority of Americans have access to high-speed broadband connections, nearly one-third of Americans have no broadband at all. Imagine not being able to afford high-speed internet access. It certainly would limit your ability to engage in the 21st century. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, we'll be focusing on an issue that's been getting a lot of attention of late. What it will take to bridge the digital divide and get more low-income, rural, and older Americans online in a way that can significantly improve their lives and increase opportunities. Our guests are Sunny Wright McPeak, President and CEO of the California Emerging Technology Fund, which for the past 8 years has been working to accelerate deployment and adoption of broadband in California. Prior to assuming the position in 2006, Sunny served for 3 years as Secretary of the California Business, Transportation, and Housing Agency. Also joining us today from Washington, D.C. is Chris Estes, President and CEO of the National Housing Conference. Since 1932, the nonprofit National Housing Conference has helped to ensure safe, decent, and affordable housing for all in America. The Center for Housing Policy, a division of NHC, works to broaden understanding of our country's affordable housing challenge and to develop ideas, resources, and policy solutions to improve the housing landscape. Sunny and Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
To frame today's conversation, let's start out by addressing why it's so important for people to have affordable broadband internet. Some people actually claim that it's a civil right.
We do, Joanne, and right now we're recording this conversation as the president is about to do a State of the Union address. Yesterday was the Martin Luther King Jr. Annual celebration across the country, and we think that in a digital age, having affordable broadband access is a civil right. It is so important because if you are going to participate in the digital economy, get a good job, be able to keep up with your homework if you're a student, be able to get a job period and apply for it. You have to do that online or get your health care or apply for a driver's license. It is an essential service in today's digital world.
So what exactly is the digital divide?
The digital divide, as we look at it, is that there are two-thirds of the people on one side who actually have access and who subscribe to high-speed internet access, which is the generic definition of broadband. And then, as you said, as many as one-third of the population that are stuck on the other side and are largely up against a wall of poverty. They are lower-income households who live in low-income neighborhoods. Their children go to schools that are usually low-performing. There's not a lot of job training in their community. There may be high crime rates. Kids might be even dodging bullets just to get to school. There's not access to other services. And so the divide is indeed the difference between those who are online and those who are not. But the real description of those who are stuck on the other side of the digital divide are the people who are up against all of the challenges, the interrelated factors of being poor. And that is why our partnership with Eden, our partnership with the National Housing Conference, is so important, because housing, where the lower income, more disadvantaged families live, is a very important place to make those connections in a neighborhood.
Chris, I'd be interested in hearing from you why you think now is a prime moment to advocate for affordable broadband internet, what some people are calling digital inclusion.
There's a couple things going on that make this a particularly important and opportune time to be having this conversation. One is that we have been having, I think, for some time in this country, sort of a general awareness of the changing of our economy that Sunny alluded to, and I think now there is much greater awareness of just sort of how much of our interactions as a society in terms of business, access to healthcare, education, all those things are really inexorably linked and integrated into the internet and sort of online community in a way that I think has become much more tangibly real for the public and policymakers to understand. We are also coming out of a great recession, which was extremely difficult for a lot of low and moderate income working families, vulnerable populations, as well as people who had been, you know, reasonably successful. And the awareness of this, that the economy, while improving and certainly adding jobs and things like that, has still left behind a lot of folks, I think is very much front and center in the public and policymakers' minds. And I think it creates sort of a confluence of issues that make this a pretty effective time. People are aware that housing affordability is a significant challenge, and it is in lots of places around this country, especially in for rental housing, which hasn't always been a well-recognized fact in many communities. And then this sort of awareness of the divide in our economy and sort of how much the access to the digital world means for success for families economically and for their children educationally is I think really reaching a pretty strong consensus point. So I think that makes it it's both an important opportunity, but it's also one where we can have much more productive conversations with folks because we have really a much stronger body of evidence of sort of why this stuff matters and what the impact is of doing these interventions well.
I want to I totally agree with Chris, but also say he's being pretty modest and really in addition to the confluence of all of the activities happening, what is so different today is that there is the right alignment of leadership. And Linda Mandolini, the CEO of Eden, brought Chris together with the California Emerging Technology Fund less than a year ago. We had a conversation. Chris agreed to convene key stakeholders and advocates in Washington, D.C. in June around their housing conference and the gala that was recognizing Diane Spaulding and Nonprofit Housing of Northern California had done a great deal of work already as a partner to CETF. And all of these things sort of have now crescendoed into a critical mass of leaders who are taking on this issue. And leadership is always so important that I want to make sure that everybody listening understands that if it were not for Eden, if it were not for National Housing Conference, we probably wouldn't be where we're at today. And so that is important. And then there has been this growing receptivity at HUD, at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. There have been voices who've been champions of getting access and connectivity for residents in housing that is publicly subsidized. There's a pending at the Federal Communications Commission applications by companies who are purchasing, merging with others, acquiring others. That's presenting an opportunity for a debate. And then I think the White House and President Obama in his administration returning back to a theme that he had echoed when he was running for office initially and first sworn in, talking about the need for access across our country and everybody being online. That's what we're now seeing finally happen because so many people have toiled in the vineyards. Now the fruit is beginning to ripen, and we want to seize this opportunity. And I am so grateful on behalf of the California Emerging Technology Fund and the rest of us in California to have the leadership that Eden and NHC have brought to the table.
Sunny, tell us about CETF's Internet for All Digital Access campaign.
The California Emerging Technology Fund has joined with now another 118 other organizations across the country, including Eden, and everyone on that's based in here in Washington, D.C., to get as many voices agreeing that we need Internet for All now, which means a widely available affordable broadband rate. For many low-income households, an offer around $10 a month is quite affordable, and some companies are offering that for the single-family detached home low-income household. Many of us know that there is a different set of economics and circumstances that confront the multi-housing project owners, those who are housing authorities or nonprofit housing organizations, and it is on that front that the National Housing Conference has been facilitating the development of a policy paper with broad support nationally that we're going to start briefing policymakers in our capital at the federal level around. And that Internet for All campaign means right now we want the FCC, as these applications are pending for mergers, acquisitions, corporate consolidations, Comcast is acquiring Time Warner Cable, trading territory with Charter Communications, AT&T is purchasing DirecTV. We want out of those acquisitions, if they are to be approved by the FCC, a tangible public benefit in the form of an affordable broadband offer at $10 a month for all low-income households. And so today we see more than 115,000 communications have gone to the FCC by more than 45,000 individuals. That's what our Internet for All campaign is about, and anybody who wants to can go to the Internet for All Now website and become a part of the growing voices demanding that civil right.
You mentioned the Comcast-Time Warner merger. Why is that merger so important to this issue of affordable Internet?
Comcast already has a major market in many states, and in California is very prominent in Northern California. They are proposing to purchase Time Warner Cable, which is dominant in the Los Angeles, Southern California region, and trade territories with Charter that has Long Beach and parts of Northern California. They have parts of Turlock, where my mom lives. And so if this merger goes through and the application is approved, as Comcast has requested, 87% of the state will be a Comcast market. 87% of all of the children on free and reduced lunch will live in Comcast territory. 87% of all low-income households will be in Comcast territory. So for California and essentially 19 other states who will be dominant Comcast markets, this is the ballgame. If the FCC does not negotiate with Comcast, require of Comcast, or accept a voluntary offer from Comcast to actually invest in effective marketing of their affordable offer and get a lot more people signed up, we're going to lose the opportunity to close the digital divide in California. That's why this one is so important to us.
And you have five particular recommendations for the FCC regarding the merger?
We do, because we know from 8 years of working with a network of more than 100 community-based organizations and lots of other partners, school districts, local governments, universities, there is a way to be effective in signing up people for broadband if they're a low-income household. There are three barriers for low-income families to overcome if they're going to subscribe to high-speed Internet. One is cost. Two is relevance. The second barrier is it relevant to their lives? And the third is digital literacy, knowing how to use the technology and having a computing device that connects to the Internet, a computer of some sort or a tablet or an iPad. What we've seen with the program that Comcast offered 3 years ago in order to be able to purchase NBC Universal, a program called Internet Essentials, is that they've addressed one of those barriers. They've addressed the cost issue, and they have an offer that is $10 a month. That's a very good price point. They have not been able to effectively deal with relevance, outreach into the community by a trusted messenger, or the training to use the technology. That is why the whole program requires partnering with community organizations, with Eden, with the Chicana Latina Foundation, with Radio Bilingüe, with Youth Policy Institute throughout California. Those organizations that are on the ground in the target neighborhoods really have to be partners, and they have to be funded well, sufficiently, by the company in order to be able to do the outreach and to sign people up. And so our recommendations to the FCC, the five, are, first, set a goal. We need to absolutely have a performance accountability goal for how many people, what percentage of the eligible market should be signed up by the company. Secondly, extend the program to all low-income households. It's important to reach families who have children in school, but there are about three times as many low-income households in the major market states that don't have kids in school as are families with children on the lunch program. We need the company, Comcast in their territory, Charter in theirs, to capitalize an independent fund in each of the markets, major state markets, that is administered by an entity selected through an open competitive process to be very efficient, and then grantees who are awarded funds on a performance basis, on actual sign-ups. We have proposed that nationally Comcast and Charter should be putting up about $700 million, which is just a prudent number. And if it's operated on a performance basis, i.e. grants awarded and payments made as people are actually signed up for the program, the payback period to Comcast and Charter on a $700 million investment is just 3 years. That's a very short payback. And then our fourth recommendation is there needs to be a national oversight committee. And the fifth is there needs to be a standalone internet offer, both for the market, broad market, including all income levels, and then make sure that those who are low income, if they continue to pay their bill for the Internet Essentials program, that they're not cut off, even if other bills are in arrears. Those are our five recommendations. If they are implemented in one way or another, if the FCC accepts that voluntarily from Comcast, if they urge Comcast to come in with those, now we could sign up for that $700 million, $2.5 million households, and significantly close the digital divide in California and in this country.
So would these recommendations apply to any internet provider, including, for instance, the AT&T DirecTV merger?
Yes. From our recommendation, it applies to all companies. We have filed officially in the AT&T proceeding, and we will do so for every other proposed merger or acquisition that comes before the regulators.
The National Housing Conference has started a connectivity work group that's funded by California Emerging Technology Fund. So Chris Estes, president of NHC, could you tell us the goals and the purpose of this connectivity work group?
Sure. One of the goals is to engage the affordable housing community in this conversation, to get folks who are curious about it, folks who are passionate about it already, sort of to the table together, and really build the kind of bridges, both in terms of practice and creating, and in terms of the diversity of folks that need to be involved in this, so that we can create a strong, cohesive coalition of folks to have this conversation with HUD and policymakers at the federal level in a successful way. We want to figure out what great things people are doing or are interested in doing in different parts of the country, or their members are doing, whether it's association of folks involved in public housing or large nonprofit developers, people who have been more entrepreneurial in their housing approaches and have been thinking about this along with other things like energy efficiency and education for their residents. So there's been a lot of good work by many folks. We want to bring all that together with the synergy of what the California folks have been doing, really learn from that and create a real sense of momentum and consensus around what needs to happen at the federal level, both specifically for HUD, and but also just what we want the right folks in Congress and the administration to help us make happen.
And there are some research goals as well. I understand to date there hasn't been a ton of research around broadband internet access for low-income households.
Right. And so one of the pieces we're doing is where our working group is working on a set of recommendations. We've drafted about six so far and sort of working on finalizing that and getting the full group's buy-in. And then along with that, there'll be some research work done to really particularly look at the best practices of what people have done and how we can quantify what the impact is, what the benefits are to children's education, to access to the workforce and employment opportunities and things like that, so that we're not just advocating around theoretical or rhetoric itself, but just we're really able to talk about what's worked and what we've learned. And because I think, as most folks would know, even intuitively, you know, simply having access to broadband is not enough to have the kind of impact. We want to know what people have done to sort of bring folks into how they use this, understanding so people take full advantage of what this kind of access can provide, and both in how children and parents do that together, or older adults and sort of potentially accessing technology for the first time that get them connected in both their own health and other well-being services, or to their families and reduced isolation and things like that. So there is a real need for research that can really demonstrate and put these things out so that we are really advocating effectively for what we know what works, and can kind of present the information to policymakers in a way that they can trust and act appropriately.
California Emerging Technology Fund has an additional campaign called Get Connected, which is really focused around digital literacy. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Sunny?
Yes, Joanne. We launched that a number of years ago so that there is basic information about how to use the Internet, how to sign up in multiple languages, in five languages, that there are units of information such as how to protect your child online safety, which is one of the most popular pages visited on the website. And it's our general umbrella for providing the basic awareness in the public around the need to have everybody connected in California. And that has just added to the momentum. Much of what we've seen happen in California is because we've had the right leadership align in the administration, in the legislature, in the California Public Utilities Commission, in our community-based organization. And when it came to housing, it took about 4 years, but last year, 2013, the legislature actually stepped forward, and Chairman Stephen Bradford, who was chair of the Utilities and Commerce Committee in the Assembly, authored a bill, Assembly Bill 1299, to appropriate $25 million to go into connectivity for publicly subsidized multifamily attached housing. And that got through the legislature with his partner or ally, colleague in the Senate, Senator Alex Padilla, who's now our state Secretary of State in California, was the chair of the corresponding committee in the Senate, moved that legislation. They had to work really fiercely with the industry to get all the kinks out, but it was an example of California, again, stepping up to the plate and being on the cutting edge of addressing housing connectivity issues, part of our Get Connected and Internet for All overall efforts.
With many affordable housing advocates tuning into our podcast, where might you direct them for more information and ideas for how to best lobby for digital inclusion? Maybe we could give both of your URLs.
We would encourage everybody to join the Internet for All Now campaign and go to the website, Internet for All Now, and sign up to send a message to the FCC to get affordable broadband rate available to all low-income households. That's the first action to be taken right now because of the pending applications before the Federal Communications Commission. For all other information about our smart housing, please, we encourage everybody to go to the California Emerging Technology Fund website, which is www.cetfund.org, and then contact us if you need to by email or by phone to get additional information.
And what about the National Housing Conference, Chris?
The easiest way is to direct folks to our website, nhc.org, and that's where you can you'll have access to any of the policy documents as they get developed will be there, along with research as it's published and information about the working group itself if people are interested in participating, as well as I think particularly by in the next few months as we really shift into moving those recommendations from the group to the policy forefront, how people can get involved in that effort as well.
Chris Estes, president of the National Housing Conference, and Sunny Wright McPeak, president and CEO of the California Emerging Technology Fund. I want to thank you both so much for making yourselves available today to talk about this critical issue.
Thank you, Joanne.
And we look forward to speaking with you again as your work continues to gain hold. I'm Joanne Green. To hear other free episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast, and we now have 75 episodes in our archives, please visit us on iTunes or at edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.